especially given that it was so last minute due to my dropping the ball. So thank you very much for your participation.
Happy to be here.
This is just an informal meeting that we try to do before our city council meeting to maybe just hash out whatever we need to deal with at the time. We have been discussing through multiple directions housing issues in our county in general and Midway in particular. And we really wanted to have someone here that has affordable housing background and understands a lot of this. We're going to end up just asking questions or having discussions, and what we would really welcome from you is just feedback. And you can certainly, you know, jump in at any point. This is very non-formal. In fact, we're sitting here eating while we're doing this. So
I'm watching you eat. It's making me hungry.
That's really good. Sorry. So with that said, I would say one of the I would say I need to officially open this meeting, don't I, Brad? It is Tuesday, the 2nd of August at 5 p.m. We're in the Midway Community Center Council Chambers. Excused from this meeting is Lisa Oram, who's out of the country. And Steve is out of town, but he is joining us via Zoom. And also joining us is Pat Matheson. And Pat, will you give us your official title, please?
Yes, I'm the Executive Director at Mountain Lands Community Housing Trust.
And Mountain Lands Community Housing Trust is working on a project that's currently being built in Heber, if I'm not mistaken.
That's right.
Okay. So, again, thank you for being here. I wondered if you would be willing to offer one of the things we talk about a lot, our ADUs. And, you know, it's one of those things that's a two-edged sword. It increases density, and yet it could be providing housing that's a little bit more affordable, especially if it were somehow, I don't know, deed restricted or had some sort of parameters. Do you have any thoughts or opinions on ADUs?
Sure. Yeah, happy to talk about that. And thank you, Mayor Johnson, and everyone else for inviting me. I'm very grateful to participate today. Regarding the topic of ADUs, there are all sorts of benefits that you might get out of having accessory dwelling units in the community. Not the least of which is affordable housing, of course, but there's also opportunities for sort of multi-generational living. I've talked recently to a group of seniors in Summit County who are in homes with steps or that are a little bit larger and are actually looking at ADUs as an option to downsize in their own backyard and maybe move kids or a family into the larger unit and rent out their primary unit and live in essentially their own backyard. While the main unit is rented out. So that's just one of the other many ways that an ADU can build community. And in fact, as I think about, you know, communities like Midway and others across the Wasatch Back, where second home ownership becomes more and more prevalent, you know, our neighborhoods empty out. And I think that the loss of people, just people from our neighborhoods, is one of, you know, has other repercussions down the line in terms of the fabric of, you know, our communities and our relationships and that sort of thing. Now, from that sort of the soft side, the social side, you know, from a planning perspective, yes, you're adding density into a neighborhood. Now, one of the arguments in favor of that sort of density is that you might say, well, look, if we said we wanted to create, 24 affordable housing units, the simple way to do that would be, I said simple as if it's something we can just snap our fingers and do, but simple way to do that, traditional way to do that would be to build a 24-unit complex of some sort, right? Townhomes or, you know, stacked apartments or something like that. Now, if you if you incentivize and encourage some sort of ADU program, and there are dozens and dozens across the country where cities with affordable housing issues in particular, you know, do some waived fees and some expedited process, and, you know, if you have an approved set of design, then, you know, you sort of, it's an administrative review and that sort of thing. And if you could attach those fee waivers and other benefits to some sort of agreement with the homeowner to lease that unit or rent that unit on a year-round basis or something like that, and you did that for 24 units, well, now you just added 24 units of needed housing into your community, and you didn't build any apartments. So not saying that you can do one and not the other. You can certainly do both, and I think that there's a need for both. But I think of ADUs as sort of a less impactful way of actually doing density when you compare it to maybe the traditional multifamily style, which again I think is important, but that is sort of a side benefit.
So,
Mayor,
go ahead, Kevin.
And I know I may have mentioned this in the past, so at the risk of kind of repeating, this whole issue of affordable housing, I'm looking from this stepping way back at the 48,000 foot level as to what's causing affordable housing. And I think if we understand that, then we at least can understand why certain aspects, in my opinion, certain things need to be done in order to make anything affordable. First and foremost, because we're in a, what we call a free market economy, left to the free market, especially in high demand areas like here, you know, I saw that when we were doing a lot of apartment development in San Jose during the tech boom. And people were renting out, you know, floor space in the living room just to live. It was just, long story short, I guess, what I'm getting at is in a free market economy, and I would relate this to ADUs as well, as an example, any type of unit. In a high demand area like this, left to the market, ultimately is not going to become what you would deem affordable. Because the market will take over. We're seeing that in home prices here.
Right.
The second thing is, whatever you build, whether it's a small unit, large unit, medium-sized unit, single-family detached home, townhome, apartment, you name it, whatever you're building, you know, side by side, developing those from the highest density to the lowest density, the cost is the same, whether it's affordable or not, in terms of development costs, construction costs, land, impact fees, you name it. And in order to make something affordable, I mean, there's two kind of financial routes. One is for something that's for sale affordable, that someone can purchase a home, right? So you need to make it affordable at a price that they can have affordable housing payments and not be house poor because half of their housing payments goes to a mortgage. That's not affordable. Or whether you're building something that you rent, whether it's an ADU unit. Now, ADU has a little unique aspect in terms of existing, you know, homes that already kind of have that situation. But nevertheless, in general, it's going to cost you the same to do what we call market rate versus affordable. And so, to me, those issues, the market forces and costs, understanding that picture leads to two key things, I think, for anything to be successful and affordable. A, you've got to have some type of restriction, de-restriction, because left to the market forces or left up to a homeowner is going to, you know, they, again, without restrictions, there's nothing, you know, in the market, there's nothing wrong for someone to charge whatever the commanding rent would be. And ultimately, that'll catch up.
Right.
On the development side, in order to bring this housing to fruition, someone has to pay for that delta. We call it, in affordable housing, we call it the gap, right? Where somehow that gap has to be made up financially. There's a lot of ways that I've seen that done, from providing subsidy loans to deferring development fees to waiving impact fees to, I mean, and you can go on and on. But somehow it has to be paid for in order to make it work. That left to its own kind of just the market forces, I don't believe you're going to have someone step in and provide affordable housing. Unless, in the rare cases, you're going to have someone who's philanthropic that wants to do that. But without left to the market, and we're seeing that now, no one's developing it. So I just wanted to kind of raise those as we kind of look at different solutions and understand whatever we do, if it's ADU, you name it, whatever we build, it's got to have, in my opinion, long-term deed restrictions, or else the stock of that affordable housing that we participate in or encourage or whatever will go away.
Yep.
And in order to make it happen, there's got to be some subsidy, and it typically requires very deep subsidy on a per unit basis. So I didn't mean to be long-winded.
No, I appreciate that. And Pat, I guess I would ask you. I had the same thought about deed restriction. Are you aware in any community? Your predecessor once came and had a meeting with myself and Kevin, and just shared that, in his opinion, one of the drawbacks to ADU was enforcement of deed restrictions, being able to maybe run around to multiple places in town where they have ADUs and check on them or whatever. So I'd like to get your opinion on deed restriction and how enforceable and possible is that even to do, and if you have an opinion on how to even maybe make it a more manageable and enforceable option.
Right. Yeah, that is a great question. And I think that, so Scott Loomis was my predecessor.
Yes.
Scott's point, I think, was, you know, there's more efficient ways of creating units. However, that is true, patently true, I think. But also, you think of affordable housing like a quiver of arrows. And depending on the site, depending on the community, you're gonna fly a different arrow depending on what you're trying to do. And so ADUs is one of those tools. In terms of how to monitor, you know, some sort of a deed restriction, I think that what you have to do is, this probably happens at a municipal level, is to say, all right, well, we're going to either provide some sort of a service contract to another entity, or maybe it's through like the Wasatch County Housing Authority, or maybe it goes on the job description of someone in your planning department. And I know that they have nothing to do, right? No, I'm just joking. I can't believe all the work that planners would be able to get in a day. But I think you have to put it on someone's job description, and then they have to follow up. Now, Mountain Lands, we're a small operation. We're only really three people in our office, and we provide stewardship services for over 100 units across the Wasatch Back that are for sale that have deed restrictions on them, and they have all sorts of deed restrictions on them. Just today, two different issues came to my attention about, you know, those requirements and restrictions on some of those units. Now, we have service contracts in place with both Summit County and Park City to perform that service. We have worked with Wasatch County Housing Authority in the past on issues like that. But I think that it certainly can be done. Now, how to pay for it, you just have to ask, is this something that, you know, we can find funds in the budget from some other source because we think that this is important. You might be able to include some sort of a fee that maybe an owner of an ADU pays for sort of that eligibility service. But if you leave the management of the unit up to the homeowner, and then the city or whoever, maybe on behalf of the city, is just ensuring that, yes, the unit is being leased per whatever restrictions. Let's say it's a year lease, and yes, the tenant is living in good conditions that aren't unsafe, and no, they haven't packed in 20 people in here, and yes, they're parking on concrete and not on grass or whatever. You know, you do a periodic inspection of that thing. It can become sort of a regular thing that doesn't have to be a giant lift, and I think you can work it into to other efforts that are similar in sort of how you would approach them. And then I think the other question is, how do you get those restrictions on there, and what do they look like, and are they permanent? Now, different communities approach this in different ways. I think the city of Santa Cruz in California has a really robust ADU program, and they have gone back and forth on sort of a 15-year restriction and a permanent restriction. And so one of the questions is, well, if it is a permanent restriction, how are you going to help the homeowner in the future? Because as Kevin knows very well, and anyone else would understand, your rent, the amount that you can rent it for may be limited, but the amount that your plumber's going to charge you certainly isn't limited, right? No one else is bound by those limits on the expense side. And so if it is going to be something perpetual, then you need to have some foresight as you're setting up the program to think, 10 years from now, as expenses are climbing higher than what the income to the homeowner is, can we help fill that gap that Kevin was talking about? Is there some way of doing that? Or maybe you say, look, there is a sunset period to this. There's a term to these restrictions, and they go away after a certain period of time. Different communities have approached it different ways, but I do agree that without restrictions, you haven't really done anything because the market is going to come and scoop those right up.
Pat, for that specific example, I would see as you're very well aware that deed restrictions that are tied to some level of affordability. Like a median income level percentage would allow those rents to kind of increase as incomes increase.
Right.
Which you would, for the most part, should be able to kind of cover the expenses unless you're hitting a very high inflationary period like we are now.
Yeah, for the most part it's good. In inflationary periods like this, you get into a little bit of trouble, but usually that tends to even out. That's a great point.
Mayor, could I speak to this point? Because you're circling around what my thoughts have been.
Good. Go ahead.
I think an ownership model for affordable housing is dead in Midway. Ain't going to happen. Our developers are too stuck in their plans, their MO, just not going to happen. So we have to look at a rental model. ADUs are never an ownership issue. They're always rentals. Okay? So if we're talking ADUs, we are talking rentals, not ownership.
I agree.
Deed restrictions, pardon?
I agree.
Yeah. Deed restrictions are based primarily on an ownership model. So let's not talk about deed restrictions. I got a different idea.
So I think we don't mean necessarily the word deed, but rather rental restrictions. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, okay, when you talked with Scott and Kevin previously, it was prior, I'll bet you anything, it was prior to the legislature said cities and even HOAs can no longer discriminate against ADUs. So right now, we already have the problem of ADUs.
But wait,
problem, if you want to call it a problem.
Well, Steve, I think we need to differentiate between an IADU, which is what the legislature passed.
Of course.
And then
that's
an ADU.
That's all we're talking about.
Well, I was
that's
actually,
all we're talking about.
No, I was actually talking about an ADU. So maybe something over a garage, or maybe something in the backyard, or whatever. I wasn't talking about IADU. I was talking about ADU. sorry.
Let me clarify.
Okay.
You're right. The legislature has said you can't discriminate against internal APUs. Midway still discriminates against external APUs. We have no ordinance that allows it because the legislature has said we don't have to do it. I've been butting my head against the wall for 2 years to try to get external APUs to no joy. So, of course, we're only talking about internal APUs.
No, I think I'm going to disagree because IADUs are now allowed and we've already done what we have to do as a municipality for those. I wanted to explore the possibility of doing ADUs. So I think, you know, if we want to go down the ADU route because we want to try to create some affordable housing, I want to know how to do that in a way that doesn't just increase density. So that's why I was talking about rental restriction pricing or something like that. But I very specifically was addressing ADU and not IADU.
And Mayor,
let's direct Michael to prepare an ordinance for that purpose because I haven't seen it. But let me continue on. Let's not get bogged down in the external versus internal. How do we do this? We've always had enforcement problems. One of the things that I've heard when I was on the Open Space Committee and since then is that there are a lot of residents in the older parts of town, maybe even outside, but clearly in the central district zoning areas, who feel like they're being priced out of the homes that they own through property taxes, et cetera, and they don't know what to do other than to sell. And they sell to a developer who comes in and puts in multiple homes, et cetera, et cetera. And we lose. That's how you get more density, is you don't provide an option for these homeowners to avoid selling to a developer who's going to put in density because that's the market model. So how about we take some money that we get for parking, say, and we use that to fund improvements on these homes through loans with loan restrictions that require that the money be used to create internal ADUs that meet our code and enjoy restrictions. This also then deals perhaps with the plumber who's going to charge market rates that the people can't afford. I'm not picking on plumbers. It could be anybody, contractors, framers, etc., electricians. By lending money, having a loan program where the city doesn't make a lot of money, having a loan program where people can come in, borrow funds to create an ADU, they could then stay in their homes instead of getting, you know, the only alternative being selling the home and moving into assisted living or something like that. And we have the control through loan restrictions as well as the internal APU ordinance that we have. Now, is that going to create sufficient attainable units for service workers? I don't know. I don't know how much we need. I'm hearing from businesses in town that they can't hire primarily because of the housing problems for service workers in the city. But some's better than what we got right now. So I think if we focused on a loan program, and when I saw your email about CAPs, I thought it'd be great to have one of these CAP groups put together a loan program. A strategy that allows us some controls above and beyond deed restrictions or just ordinance enforcement. It provides an opportunity for existing homeowners who want to keep the neighborhoods. It doesn't increase density. Does it increase occupancy? Yeah. But there's no new lots being developed through that mechanism. Those are my thoughts as I've been thinking through this, and just to let you know, and Michael may have been telling some of you, but the affordable or what is it, moderate income housing element of the general plan, that group that I'm on has been talking about how do we accomplish this? And of course now with the legislature saying that we can't force the development of moderate income housing on a developer, we focused on the whole ADU issue. I'd love to see it expanded beyond internal ADUs. Maybe there's some hope there. I haven't seen it. But at least with what we got, we should give that a shot. And Pat, have you seen that kind of model working anywhere?
You know, off the top of my head, Steve, I don't know of any cities who provide the entire loan, but certainly where they're helping to fill that gap. There are products, financial products out there to provide some loans and things like that. And then I've seen a lot of cities and communities who are providing, you know, sort of a lower rate gap loan or something like that, and still attaching, to your point, Steve, it's still attaching requirements with that loan and saying, you know, here's an extra $30,000 that you needed to make this possible. You're borrowing $100,000 from this lending group, and we're going to fill in the last little bit. And by the way, ours comes with these restrictions and keeps people in their homes and creates more occupancy, as you point out. Yeah, that is done across
the country. It's kind of a microfinance, kind of like Grameen does internationally. I don't know that it would take $100,000 to put an IABU.
Absolutely. No, in some cases, you're right. I'm sorry, Steve. So yeah, you're right. If you wanted to do an IADU and say, we just need to create a separate access into our upstairs or into our basement or something and build out the kitchen that's partly there but needs to be built out. Yeah, maybe that's a $25,000 grant. Yeah, I think that could certainly be done.
Your example of a retiree who doesn't need a big house anymore could build an IADU, live in that, and rent the rest of the house out to a younger family who could never afford to buy in Midway.
Right.
Who might be a school teacher, or a nurse, or a fireman. Oh, they could even work for the city.
Hey, there you go. And then in that case, they've got a neighbor up there who could look out for them, right? And
exactly. Mow the lawn.
Right, yep.
So Kevin's got his hand up, so...
I guess... To kind of tie in, piggyback off of what Steve has kind of raised, because we have the IADU law that basically limits our ability on restrictions there because it has to be now an allowed use, the strings that give us the mechanism, this is kind of what Steve, I'm going to summarize, gives us that mechanism to possibly do something together that would incentivize them to provide the internal unit and through a subsidy, whatever. That's how that can be dealt with an IDU. I don't think it'd be dealt with any other way because if someone wants to do it themselves, there's nothing we can do to restrict them whatsoever. Right? On the accessory dwelling unit, if our code does not allow it, again, that gives us the mechanism where if someone wanted that to be subsidized or a grant or however that's done, right? That's the teeth that gives us the opportunity to deed restrict both of those ways. Either way, in my opinion, whether it's an ADU or an IDU, either way, whatever incentive that we create, it's got to be enough incentive financially for them to make sense, especially, say, for an IDU. Because someone's going to look at this and go, hold it, it cost me $25,000. It's just hypothetical. If it's only $25,000 to do it, and I can charge this versus it's $25,000, but I got to pay 3% interest rate, which is kind of the rate going rate with affordable housing proceeds, even though it's a soft loan, is 3% really, you know, an incentive for someone to give up substantially increased rent? I'm just kind of thrown out that there. But those are two avenues that are available as long as on the ADU side, it's not an allowed use in our code. Because as soon as we make it an allowed use in our code, it's going to be like an IDU.
Right.
Where anyone can do it, and the only incentive we would have is to help subsidize it.
Right.
On an ADU,
we could write code that puts limitations on it.
And we wouldn't we wouldn't have to put in any funds for that.
Right. Right. Yeah.
And Kevin, I have a question about the IDUs as they currently stand, and I should know this, but I mean, could somebody today go and create an IDU in their home? And is there something to prevent them from turning that into a nightly rental that requires 90 days or something like that? Because when I think about the need for housing in the Wasatch Back, it's not just the affordability side, but it's just the, I mean, when I moved to Sutton County 5 years ago with my wife and young kid, there were only two places to rent that you could rent year-round.
Yeah.
In Sutton County, and the rest were, April to November. So even if it doesn't have sort of an affordability restriction on it, to have it just be a year lease, I think that helps build the community with, the type of folks you're trying to attract and retain.
I'm going to ask Michael to answer that question because that's a good one, and I think we do have some things in place here in Midway, but Michael, could you address that?
With the IADUs, they're allowed throughout town as long as you own at least 6,000 square feet, but it's specific in the code that they can't be up for nightly rental. And so, but we do have an overlay district where there are nightly rentals, so there are a few spots where it could happen, but generally you wouldn't be able to do it.
Wasn't there a restriction on, correct me if I'm wrong, on an IDU that for an existing home, they could increase the footprint, if you will?
That's correct. It has to be internal.
But for a new home that's coming in, they can just design that in to it up front.
Yep, that is correct. Yep.
But unless they were in the nightly rental overlay zone, the transient rental overlay zone, their IADU would have to be a long-term rent situation.
That is correct.
Okay. So, Pat, does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. I think that's fantastic, again, because, as these trends are going to continue, right, what eventually happens is the market gets so far away from what, your typical whoever can afford that even becomes a real benefit to our small communities just to have housing that has people living in it, right? My family and I lived in an affordable townhome that Ivory Homes built, and we were so grateful to have neighbors. I mean, that was just the greatest thing to us because the other neighborhoods we lived in the Summit County area, our neighbors were never there, right? Or they were nightly rentals or something. So just when we think about what a healthy community is, it's built on people. And just to have someone there all the time who's an active community member who's volunteering and playing soccer and going to church or whatever, I think is a real benefit. So
hey,
I think that's great.
Corbin, quick question. I don't want to get too much into the weeds on this, but I can't recall. For what was my question? For an IDU, I had it on the tip of my tongue. Oh, for either an IDU or even if we had an allowed ADUs, let's say, for example, can an HOA restrict that?
They took that away.
Okay, so that doesn't trump the state law for IDUs.
It doesn't, and I'm fascinated by that. It hasn't been challenged yet. I don't know if anyone's going to challenge it, but no, they stated that it overturns CC&Rs that restrict it.
I would say the one pretty glaring variable, at least with the PDUs and things like that in Midway, is the component that that Midway added that you have to have parking. You have to be able to provide parking. Now in Ballet, you know, there are some larger places, some that have three car garages and maybe would allow an IADU place to rent in their thing and park it maybe on that third driveway slot or something.
Well, just like, one comment on that. Part of our code is you have to own at least 6,000 square feet. And so really the
of
plan
property, you, not of house. Oh.
Yeah, and so most plan unit developments, except for those hybrid ones that we've got, like Dutch Fields and Yale States, you wouldn't be able to have them in Raymond Farm or Appenzell or really Valet, because you wouldn't own 6,000 square feet.
Of property.
Of property.
So, so is there a restriction with square footage of the house itself?
There's not, just the actual property.
For what it's worth, what was interesting, I had the opportunity down in an area just south of a suburb of Tucson there, near Green Valley, and looking at new homes under construction down there, and full subdivisions had, these are brand new homes, had an internal dwelling unit on the ground floor. And that, you know, they were selling the homes in that fashion. So whether we see that in the future, you know, depends on kind of the demographics and the profile of buyers. But there are places that are...
That's how they're addressing the issue.
Well, I don't think... This is developers coming in. I don't think they're coming in and trying to solve affordable housing.
Oh, okay.
I think the dynamics of the demographics are that... I'm sure, you know, a higher percentage of Hispanics, and you may see, you know, a mother, grandmother, whatever, living in the unit, and anyway.
Yeah, just a comment. We've had one home apply to install an IADU, but we've had a couple of new construction permits that have had completely separate units in them, and so we're starting to see a few of them.
Jeff, any thoughts? I was just going to kind of come back to you. Go ahead.
I guess I did have one kind of question for Pat, in that you mentioned a lot of cities that do great things with affordable housing, but they seem like larger cities with much larger budgets. So if our city has a total annual budget of $4 million, what realistically can we do?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and there have been some smaller cities, and I will, I know somewhere I've got a nice list, and I'd be happy to share that with you all of some examples and case studies. But I think that one thing that really helps is demystifying and expediting the process, and I think that there's a place for a municipality to help in that by saying, for example, let's say this kind of permit is administrative and it can be handled by the city manager, right? Or something like that. Sorry, say that again.
We can't afford a city manager.
We just overworked the mayor. She's really cheap.
Oh, shoot. I think that, yeah, the process on that side is one thing. I think the other thing that's interesting is there are a lot of people who are interested in this sort of thing, but they don't have any construction experience, they don't have any development experience. And any of us in this room who have ever tried to remodel our homes know what a pain that can be. And it's intimidating to folks who might otherwise do it. There are companies out there who make it their business, maybe not on the IDU side, but certainly on the ADU side, where you have the external detached unit, where, you know, they'll fabricate this thing off-site. All they need to do is pour a footer foundation and connect their utilities, and, you know, they're in and out and install the home in, you know, a week, and it's been inspected and that sort of thing, and it's been built in the factory, and then they inspect it all along the way, and so they sort of provide turnkey services. In fact, a local Midway resident, Cooper Ballstead. I don't know if any of you know of Cooper Ballstead, but he works for a company who does just that. And we've talked to him about possibly trying to do something like that in the Wasatch Back, where their company can provide a turnkey service, permitting everything like that, so that let's say a homeowner says, yeah, I see the vision, I want to create something, I want my kids to be able to move here, or yeah, I would love to have some help around my house, or I want to move into it and rent my house, but I'm not a developer, I don't know where to start on this thing. If you had a partner who can provide that service, that takes that fear away from it, from the homeowner. It makes it a little bit easier. And then on the municipality side, back to your question, if you can make that process easy and fast and take the risk out of it, to say, look, this is our vision, this is our goal, and if you provide us with these 10 things, then yeah, we're gonna push you through that process. You're gonna give us some sort of a, whether it's the deed restriction or whether there's some loan that has loan terms about, how long they live there or any affordability measures. I think that a little bit of leverage from the city side, from the municipal side, can help to expedite that and facilitate other partners who can come in and do a lot of the lifting for you.
Mayor, I had another question, probably Corbin or Michael, or both question. So, obviously the approved bill, what was it, 303 kind of ties our hands in terms of being able to impose any type of affordable housing impact fee. Can we as a municipality out of the Midway City property tax revenue set aside, or any other revenue source for that matter, set aside a certain amount every year for whatever projects that the city may endeavor to take on down the road?
I don't know any restrictions. I mean, I think that budget comes back to you unless... I mean, I'm not aware of any restrictions. You can do capital projects, and I guess if that's considered a capital project, you could do it. Do you know of any restrictions?
I'm not aware of any restrictions on just using general fund money.
So I guess taking it a step further, and so, if our budget without that is normally X, can we do X plus Y and not run afoul of...
So
state law that's kind of prohibiting us collecting and setting that. You follow what I'm getting
at? I totally follow. And I think, one of the things Brad and I were talking about, I was trying to wrap my head around how my house doubled in value in a year. With the tax thing, I totally get it and I understand it. And what's weird about the whole tax thing is that with my huge tax increase, that means somebody in Wasatch County's property value had to go down.
I haven't met anyone whose taxes
went down. I want to know about that, right? But the point I was kind of discussing about with Brad is I was asking him to help me kind of understand this a little bit better, is that if, Midway hasn't increased the percentage we're allowed to have, and to go through the truth and taxation process in order to do that, obviously raises taxes is something none of us are terribly comfortable with, especially right now. But should we decide that we want to dedicate some sort of funding to something like this, I think that's exactly what we would have to do. Because I believe that our operating budget right now is about as tight as it can be. And to just be able to say, hey, we want to start doing X amount every year and we want to put it into this fund, either for a revolving loan situation or for some sort of, to compensate a builder who's willing to come in or whatever, I just don't, in my opinion, I don't know that we could do something like that without raising taxes and without going through the truth and taxation process.
The reality is on the increased assessment, you're absolutely right. When you look at the especially city of Midway, mm-hmm. but a little bit less overall countywide, but Midway's share, for example, that goes to the state levy school tax mm-hmm. doubles. Mm-hmm. So I think you're right. Everyone's, because of things like that, I think because the district is the portion they're collecting for the bond, almost at least for Midway's portion, looks like it about doubled. So I think that's where you're seeing why everyone's
prioritizing
going up. I've learned recently three matching words: lease revenue bond.
Well, you said that so enthusiastically.
Well, that's how you do it without increasing taxes, or so I'm told.
Right.
But all jest aside, we've done what, as far as I know, we've done revenue bonds for the cemetery and for a grocery store.
For Birdie Lane.
I don't believe we did any bonding for the grocery store. We're just giving back their taxes.
Yeah, that's a CDRA.
So that's a CDRA.
Well, CDRA, but we worked with them to get their financing. It may not have been a city bond, but by agreeing to do that, they were able to get their financing. Yeah. The point is, there are things outside of property taxes we could do if we had the heart for it to help solve the problem. I don't know how big our problem is, to tell you the truth. All I know is I've talked with business owners. They say they can't get employees because of housing. And, you know, the city hasn't experienced the same problem with hiring people. Is it 20, 30, 40, 50? I don't know. But, you know, we ought not thinking big apartment complexes, and certainly maybe not to solve all of Wasatch County's problems.
Steve,
we should explore some things we could do.
Steve, I agree. I think you hit the nail on the head towards the end there, and that is that I think any jurisdiction, county, state, you name it, throughout the U.S. Could never claim that they're meeting all of their affordable housing needs. It just, in a free market economy, and it's just, you know, completely impossible to do. But that shouldn't stop us from trying to do what we can. And I think, I mean, we've spoken at the, you know, the county, the Affordable Housing Board, and I think it's a good direction to do. And that is, well, then let's prioritize. So rather than kind of handcuff ourselves because we'll never be able to solve the affordable housing need in Midway, let's at least prioritize. Yeah. Where we want to try and make an impact, and even if we make small steps, that's better than
no steps.
Than no steps at all. Yeah,
I agree. And Pat, in these, we've got a few minutes left. I'm wondering. I'd like to ask a question that is going to perhaps sound a little bit harsh, and I certainly don't mean it to. But I feel like it's important when an organization like yours comes in to do housing, and it's specifically for folks who work in the county. I think that's incredibly valuable. And I 100% understand supply chain issues, et cetera. The project you've been working on in Heber, interestingly enough, two Midway City employees have applied, have been accepted, and, you know, thought they would be in homes a year ago, right? Is this a typical situation because you're operating in a no-profit scenario? I mean, I'm trying to understand that if we were to do a project, even a small one, maybe a two or three or four home situation where we go through
right.
an organization like yours, is this a typical scenario?
No, the answer is it's not typical. We have had some extraordinary challenges on that project that we're sorting out. And I think that it comes down to, you know, I think I take the responsibility for that. And I think that the lesson we've learned from it is about resilience, right? And our ability in the best of times to do all sorts of different things from A to Z that any developer would do is pretty good. We have finished 104 multifamily units in Summit County within the last 2 years. Now, the reason why that project succeeded and was on time and on budget, whereas the project in Heber is not, is really comes down to scope of who's doing what, and the capacity of general contractors and things like that. What the lesson that I'm taking away from COVID and its repercussions are that Mountainlands is a trusted local advocate and creator of affordable housing opportunities. We are looking for partnerships. We are a small office. We cannot be all things to all people, but we are the ones who are laser focused on nothing but creating housing opportunities for locals in the Wasatch Back. That's it. That's all we care about. Now, there are, if we could go back in time could have foreseen these issues, we would have said, all right, let's try and, let's bring on some larger partners, a general contractor and larger partners like that who have more capacity to weather the sort of storms that the world throws at them, like the pandemic and everything that it brought. So the reason that project has been so behind schedule is essentially just an ability to react to and adapt to those sort of changes and the capacity issue on our general contractor side. We are working on some solutions right now so that the future phases of that project do not suffer that same challenge. And I'm really grateful to, I know the two people you're speaking of personally, and I think they're fantastic people, and it hurts me that they have been delayed in getting into their homes. So when I think about the future of what Mountainlands is going to do, we are going to focus on the one thing that we do really well, which is bringing people together to create the opportunities. I don't expect Mountainlands to do everything on every project. I think that we're going to look for the right partners, everything from design to construction, and then of course our local municipal partners to create projects. So a lot of lessons learned on that project. And to sum it up, it's about capacity and resilience. And I think that us focusing on what we do best is going to serve the community best rather than us trying to be all things to all people.
Got it. I appreciate that.
Yeah, thank you.
Any other thoughts or ideas? I mean, I'm just going to just spout real quickly kind of to summarize what I am hearing. If we were to go the ADU route, we could create code that would allow us to have some rental restrictions and possibly even do some sort of incentivizing. Maybe we don't charge an impact fee, or maybe we don't charge a permit fee or something to make it so that someone would want to do that, right? So we can maybe look at some avenues like that where we're increasing an opportunity. And maybe they're restricted to people who can live there, essential workers. I don't know, whatever is realistic for our community, I think we have to look at that. I think this loan concept is a good idea. I don't see us ever having enough fluidity that we could do it, but maybe that is something the county could do. They've got multiple million right now in that housing fund. Maybe they set aside X amount for some sort of low interest loan. So I think some really interesting ideas have come up. I'm just wondering, Pat, if you've got anything else you think we should think about, or Council, if you have any. We've got a couple minutes left if you want to sum up real quick.
Mayor, just real quickly, kind of piggybacking off your thoughts there, I think the things we've discussed or we should kind of explore further. I think right now, kind of where we are, because we haven't really done anything thus far, is if we explore that on the IDU and ADU to see if we can create some type of incentive program whatsoever. And the beauty of that, as well as, let's say, if we're able to, and it makes sense to set aside some funds each year out of our budget to kind of help with this so we can kind of get an amount that would be meaningful to be able to, and even if it's, it's better to do two or four units than none, right, for, say, essential employees or whatever. Is that both of those there is an advantage where a municipality, an entity, you name it, kind of is in charge of what takes place. Collecting the funds, for example, allows the city to decide exactly where they think it makes the most sense, for example, versus waiting for someone to come in and to just so happen to pick up the right site, if that makes any sense. So it gives us an opportunity as a municipality to kind of a little bit to control our own destiny and kind of push the efforts and encourage in certain areas and aspects and how it's done, versus just sitting back and kind of waiting for someone.
JC, any final thoughts?
Oh, you're brave enough to ask me. I thought you weren't going to be.
I thought you'd jump in.
You guys know I tend to look at things maybe a little differently and maybe at a super high level a lot of the time. I'm a lot more analytical, but also kind of, I look at many different angles, and I look at something very much bigger picture than I think a lot of people often do. So that's where my comments will come from. I have a few things I could say. So I agree completely that if there's no other force, you know, the market is going to do what the market's going to do, and I don't know exactly where the demand's coming from. Because it seems to be a nationwide problem, a statewide and even nationwide problem. And if all these homes, which actually are fairly plentiful, are not affordable to the vast majority of the citizens, that doesn't really add up in my mind. Doesn't seem like that's possible. But it is, apparently, the situation. And I think that something else is screwed up. A lot of things probably, but you know, wages have been off track since about the 1950s. The baby boomer generation is just kind of hitting retirement age and, you know, aging out of the workforce. I think that has something to do with it. I think honestly, if people focus down here and try to put band-aids on things, there's just going to be a whole lot of band-aids. And I don't think the problem's going to go away. I do think that, you know, it's frustrating to be in a position where, what can we do? Well, not a whole heck of a lot besides a few band-aids. And maybe some of the solutions that might be smart, somebody else said, no, we don't like that. It doesn't help us be profitable, so we're not going to allow that. And it's frustrating. So, you know, restrictions are needed. How do we get them? Incentives, yeah, I'm okay with incentives. Requirements don't have much power. We probably should have more than we do to make more difference. Because ultimately the market adjusts to everything, including subsidizing. You know, if everybody's subsidizing, well, great. Let's just make more profit. And I just think more development happens, and some people continue making their profit. Meanwhile, who's doing the subsidizing? Taxpayers. Great. Who are the people who are hurting? All the general population. Well, so they're the ones that's paying to fix what's ultimately a very screwed up system, obviously. To me, that pretty much makes me pretty sick. And I don't like that as a solution, but once again, I'm admitting, well, we don't have a whole lot we can do at this level. But I would say that I feel like we're lambs to the slaughter, lambs being led to the slaughter. And I think, the one thing we can do is we do still live in a nation where we at least get to vote. We do get to participate in government in many ways. Sitting up here is one of them, casting your vote's another. I think we need to be more active about looking at the root causes because, you know, like I said, personally, I see a lot of hurt and a lot of band-aids, and I don't see it getting better. I do think we can do little things here that will help some people and get some people through a bad situation, but I think ultimately, without bigger changes, you know, much more higher level changes. I don't think any of those problems are going to get better. I do think they're going to get worse. So that's pretty sobering, but that's what I think on that. So I do agree we should do it. I think we should look into what we can do. And I also, you know, the one thing about subsidizing that is slightly less distasteful is if you can make a one-time investment and get a very long-term, you know, the gift that keeps on giving return, then maybe it at least is worth something a little more valuable than it appears. So I like that. I also, you know, the other thing about, you know, again, if we're subsidizing as a government organization, well, that's going to come out of taxes. And, you know, everybody feeling that the tax increases, you know, is going to agree. You know, taxes are getting to the point where they're, it's like another mortgage payment, and it's, you know, I owe my property, sort of, right? And so I'm just hesitant to do that kind of thing, but there's not a lot we can do besides that. I just think we need to be very careful. I also don't think that we should be forced to give up our quality of life to solve a problem that really shouldn't be here, and that aggravates me as well, you know, that's almost feels like what we're being forced into. So yeah, a lot of aggravation, obviously, I'm expressing, but I am willing to participate in trying to come up with solutions that I think are the least painful for all of us. So now that's what I think. Aren't you glad you asked?
Those are awesome existential thoughts. No, I appreciate that. Thank you, JC. And I think those are things we should look at when we look at what solutions fit in our small community. So thank you. Jeff?
Okay.
Steve, any last? It's 6 o'clock straight up, but if you've got any last quick things, we'll take it.
I suspect you all think you've heard enough from me tonight, or at least in this work meeting.
Well, yeah, look forward to hearing more from you in the regular meeting. Go ahead, Kevin.
Only just 1 minute, just to throw out, to put in perspective kind of the subsidy that's required for things. Take a tax credit development. Those are the developments that I've done for apartments. You could take, and it's not a whole lot of apartments. Now, granted, this is in some higher cost areas, but probably similar to here now. But, you know, a $10 million development cost, land, construction, everything to complete, just for apartments, will probably be, because of the rental restrictions, from 30%, 40, 50, up to 60% of the median income rent levels, we'll probably only be able to service maybe a mortgage of $2 million. And in counties I've worked with, like in Orange County or throughout the state of California, others will kick in maybe some subsidy, maybe $1 million. Now you got $3 million. There's $7 million more of development costs you got to pay. The taxpayer program is an example where they actually get award tax credits. There's a finite amount, and banks invest in those. The return that banks are getting, no one would ever invest in. And the only reason banks are about doing this is they get CRA credits. So that's how, in that example, $8 million of subsidy to create 60 rental units. I'm just sharing that to give you a sense of the magnitude, at least on the lower end, on the service sector jobs, on and whatnot, as to the type of subsidy you're really talking about, really to make that happen and to, you know, do it of a substantial nature.
Big bucks.
Huh?
Big bucks.
Big bucks.
You know, multiple of our whole city budget.
Yeah.
All right. Pat,
Mayor?
Again.
Mayor?
Yes?
Could I just make a quick comment?
Oh, yes.
It's really neither here nor there, but I was listening to the radio once, and on the radio they said one of the challenges that we face with affordable housing is in this country we reached a point where housing was no longer considered shelter, and it turned into a way to make money. And they said that's one of the root causes of why we have such an affordable housing problem, as we've gone from shelter to a way to make money.
What do they mean by that? Do they mean... I think it's true that most people starting from scratch trying to build a nest egg their home is their largest financial asset. Is that what they mean?
Well, I think what they mean is there was a point in this country where people said, I'm going to buy a home because I need shelter. That's it.
Yeah.
And then it got to a point where I'm going to buy a home, but I'm going to make money off of it.
Yeah.
It's going to be a way for me to make some money. And so that started changing a lot of the dynamics of affordable housing in this country.
Well, I've been looking at statistics. Again, it just baffles me. If you go, I look these up, you can look up yourself. I read an article, and the article like sounded authoritative, right? But I looked it up myself, because I'm like, oh, I just want to check this. If you look at the population of the United States, you can find that data pretty easily. If you look at the number of homes in the United States, you know, every year, go look at it, and it's like, geez, we have more than we used to have. More homes per person than we used to have. But we have a major home shortage. Huh?
Well, then I'll tell you why. 1% of the population has 80% of the wealth or whatever that
is. And it's a lot of investment.
Yeah.
A quick response. Here's the reason why. And it's actually, in the long run, I think this is going to sound terrible, a good sign. But that's probably an oxymoron. Cycles in housing kind of go up and down. They just don't go straight up. They don't just go straight down. And one sign that you can go back to every type of, you know, hitting the peak and a correction is when investors are buying up homes. Because investors don't, when they're just buying it purely for an investment, I'm going to buy four homes to make money, you know, eventually there's, you know, the demand goes down and investors start unloading them. So it's terrible that we're, you know, where we are in terms of housing prices, but that's a sign, at least for me, and a hopeful sign maybe, that we could see a little bit of pullback. I don't think the pullback's going to make things affordable, but it's just...
I hope so. Many, many articles on KSO claim that won't happen, and it may be that we're just living in a high demand area and it's sort of a spot effect here in Utah, you know, and maybe it won't shift. I don't know. But I'm just looking at it going, things just don't add up.
It's invest, when you think about it, right, to Brad's point, homes were typically just bought by families, individuals to live in a home. Now all of a sudden when you have a large population of investors, that's not a demand for a family to live in a home, that's someone, like he's saying, to make a buck. When you have a big portion of investors out there, and there's a lot of them doing that. We're seeing that. And that artificially pumps up the demand. Well, that won't and cannot be sustained forever like that. It will correct at some point.
Somebody's got to pay that rent. Somebody's got to move into that, you know, VRBO for the week. Somebody's got to... And ultimately, I just... If you look at the general population, they just can't afford it. Like, I don't think there's any other argument maybe I'm wrong, but it doesn't seem like it can hold.
For an investor, because they want to make money, they have to eventually sell it.
Yeah. Okay.
Well, anyway.
Thank you, and given the hour, we're going to take a quick break. Does this group need 5 minutes, or are we good to just carry into regular meeting?
Just a motion to close.
Okay, all right. We will close our work meeting.
We close our work meeting.
Second.
You guys just hate it when I take charge. You have to like make motions and stuff. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
Anyone opposed? All right, we're going to close work meeting. Let's take a quick, just 5 minute break. Come right back and we'll start our regular meeting.
Thank you, Mayor. Thank you, Council. Great to be with you.
Thank you, Pat. And Steve, are you staying with us?
I've got so many examples.
I'm sorry, you broke up, Mayor.
Oh, I just was asking if you were going to try to stay through the regular meeting as well.
Internet willing, and the creek don't rise.
Okay. Where are you in Idaho?
I'm in beautiful Donley, and I have you on mute.
because I'm in the middle of Magic Country, and I don't want anybody to think that Midway is a harbinger of socialist ideas.
Okay. Thanks, Steve. We're taking a quick break, and we'll be right back.